This call is being recorded.
Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome to Race Treaty. This is 11-11-2016, a few days after the historic nomination of a white supremacist as the president of white supremacy or the United States. Tonight, we're going to be discussing a random things concerning this recent election and the implications going forward. And I want to mention our host, Najee Mouet, will not be with us tonight. So we're welcoming call-ins to just discuss the subject that's facing all of us, especially those of us of color, and the spike in hate crimes and the blatant manifestations of racism that have been displayed. So I'm going to go forward with that tonight and just discussing some of the headlines, because one major reporter, journalist, Sean King, has been following the spikes in incidents of racism, and it's across the board, folks. It's in elevators, it's in school rooms, it's in supermarket parking lots, these confrontations. And then also North Carolina, where I happen to be. The KKK is organizing a statewide rally in December celebrating the triumph of white supremacy by the election of Donald Trump. And so that is also the state, North Carolina, where it led in the techniques of voter suppression, where I think one of the larger people's movement, which is unfortunately has been limited to North Carolina, and speaking of the Moral Mondays movement, where it seems to be a multiracial gathering dealing with voting rights. And it seems a retro kind of activity and movement. And the fact that it hasn't really merged with Black Lives Matter leaves it questionable in my mind in terms of its impact. So we've got a new president. A lot of folks is going for the borders. I actually posted, and I'm disappointed that it may be a false information, and that was about a billionaire in Africa who was offering folks $1 million and a plane ticket to Africa if Trump was elected. Haven't heard any more chatter about that, but I have read about the numerous inquiries to Canada about moving immigration requirements for Canada. So folks are considering leaving the country. Other folks are calling them out saying, hey, this is our country. We need to stand here and fight and blase splee. But fighting to me means functioning inside of the infrastructure of white supremacy, expecting remedy. I never expect remedy inside of the white supremacist legal structure. And I'm talking about the Constitution. I'm talking about civil rights. And unfortunately, we've had this unfinished bridge between the ailments of our people and the venue of the United Nations to go before the world and before the world's courts to air our issues. And an interesting thing came about this past week, and that was in reference to a black nation, the first black nation within the United States, and maybe the only one. It was called the Kingdom of Happy Land. And it's in North Carolina, up in the mountains, 400 acres originally, I believe 400 families or people. They had a king and queen. And these are slaves that marched out of the emancipation, went from Mississippi to South Carolina up into the North Carolina hills. And I thought that's significant in that one of the problems, I think, in African Americans and people of color trying to seek remedy inside of the system of white supremacy is that we haven't found that bridge or that pathway to air our issues before the world. We do it through media, we do it through our social protests, but we really don't have a seat as a people at the United Nations tables as indigenous folks do, and any peoples according to human rights law that seek self-determination from an identity perspective can go before the UN. And so as I see all these white folks, you know, because let's talk about the statistics. We have a lot of protests now going on around the country to Trump, a lot of protests all over the country. And yet, these same folks, if you profile the protesters, you're running into that 53% of white women that voted for Trump. And you're voting, and you're also profiling the Occupy folks who feel like this is going to be maybe a spark of the next color revolution. And then you have Black Lives Matter and their splinter groups that were actually supporting Hillary Clinton and involved in the political process of voting in the next president, which basically is the next president of white supremacy. So we have a lot of work to do, and I think right now there's a lack of analysis as to how to proceed, where we go from here. People seem to be in a reactive mode right now. The protesting has rendered I don't know what outcomes, quite frankly, and the political process has spoken, and that you have a total Republican right wing racist, white supremacist administration and system that's kind of going to rear its head again in imposing its implicit bias and actually upholding the Constitution, which was not meant for people of color. And, you know, there's a lot of twists in this because I mentioned the women, the white women that voted for Trump, even though he's a rapist, child molester, blah, blah, blah. They voted for this man. And so they also, I saw a lot of trending activity concerning this woman, Anthony, where they were putting I voted tags on her, Susan B. Anthony, on her grave site based on the suffrage issue. But, you know, we also have to lend the historical lens to these activities in the fact that black women weren't allowed to join those initial protests for women's rights because they themselves were not considered citizens or worthy. So we have a lot of splintering going on. So I'm hearing people say, well, let's organize, organize, organize. And I think to myself, well, President Obama, during his initial presidential run, amassed a email network of over 8 million emails. And there was activity every day keeping people updated, you know, utilizing this this social media leverage. And then when he went into office, this people's network, if you will, this people's email network, or however you want to put it, was absorbed by the Democratic Party. It wasn't handed off to MoveOn.org or any other people's movement, given the fact that Obama says, yeah, I'm here, but you folks going to have to make me. You know I'm surrounded. You're going to have to make me. The people are going to have to make me. But yet that organizing tool was taken off the map and taken from accessibility from the people. So I think about, you know, talking about organizing around dealing with Trump, when the presidential election was really most significant in that it was like Trump got voted in by a third of the registered voters, and there was a mass boycott basically of activity because I guess people just got burned out on the lesser of the two evils. And our people and this country has not really embraced a third party as an option. I hold the Democrats, who have been failing black folks for a long time since they, you know, did the shell switch with the Republican Party. They have not produced. And yet we automatically, by default, vote Democrat rather than dealing with our interests. So, you know, Bernie Sanders is coming back with, you know, a lot of conversation and opinions. And yet he yielded over in that exchange with Hillary Clinton, his support for her. And so we're now in a very, very clearly demarcated period where white supremacy is the it's the issue of the day. It is the default. And just by the personal manifestations we're seeing of people being attacked or verbally abused, we can only wait for it to be played out in the way of policies, policies driven by and funded by budgets to implement and impose. And also, you know, we as a people have not embraced the alternatives to this white supremacist system. We have not been conscious of the global movement or the global despair our people are suffering everywhere, but the global movement centered around the decade, utilizing that as an organizing instrument as on a global basis. And there's been no leadership involved in setting up some central hub that has translation, language translators, so that we can actually communicate with all the people that are suffering the same dynamics under this decade for those of African descent. So I'm wondering where our leadership is around that. And the fact that it has $1 million budget allocated, that there's folks, you know, that are, you know, coming around the human rights issues, but only in the way of conferences and working groups and letters of recommendations and shaming letters to the U.S. But there's no legal action. No legal action. And meanwhile, corporations are engaging in legal action because they, corporations possess human rights. And so I'm really kind of observing how the spinoff to this election really takes place and how a mass or critical mass can evolve from folks coming together. But they're going to come together, it seems to me, historically around any and every other issue than white supremacy. And you have so-called white allies that, you know, they feel good. They voted for a black president of white supremacy, and there's been some, you know, social change, I guess, in the way of, you know, economic security and whatnot. I haven't seen it, and I haven't observed any reports that really signify the status of African Americans and people of color as having risen during this period of Obama's presidency. So now we have clearly the conversation around white supremacy is out there now. I question, where is the national plan to dismantle white supremacy? Can there be a national plan? I remember during this last human rights periodic review where the U.S. Human Rights Network gathers a group together to study, make reports concerning conditions of African Americans and people of color. And the U.S. really doesn't really respond with anything active, even though it's legally obligated to begin educating on a federal level at least concerning its obligation to compliance for human rights. That hasn't even begun yet. I stay with the issue of CERD, the Convention to Eliminate Racial Discrimination, or the Race Treaty, because in the language of that that human rights law, first of all, the United States signed and ratified in agreement with the Convention to Eliminate Racial Discrimination. It's not to to harbor it. It's not to educate people about it. It's to eliminate it. And so we haven't seen any proactive plan on a national level to eliminate discrimination, racial discrimination. In fact, we've seen it emboldened and empowered with the resurgence of someone like Donald Trump with no political, military, foreign affairs background. This is a result of the dumbing down of America that we've been talking about for the last 15 years. When you see someone like Sarah Palin being considered for a cabinet post, you have to realize we're in a surreal set here. This ain't reality. This has to be surreal. But our plans must be very much reality-based, self-determination, creating our own institutions, dealing with food sovereignty, finding that path to the international courts to address our issues. I do believe that there should be a global lawsuit in the United States should be brought to world courts for the system of white supremacy. But as of yet, and we have a, as I said before, a more organizing mechanism, the decade of those African descents, UN-sanctioned 10-year period, but there aren't any benchmarks. It's based on, you know, recognition, justice and development, and we recognize the state that we're in. The justice is going to elude us unless we go through a legal process to try to obtain it, and that cannot be done within a white supremacist system. And then development, which involves obviously reparations, which doesn't mean everybody gets a check, but we do need our own institutions. We do need our own psychologists, our mental health issues. We do need our own employment. We need our own industry for that matter. I mean, African Americans are 90% consumers. We own no land, 3.1%, I think, of the land. We're the eighth richest country in the world, thereabouts, if we put our monies together. And yet we control no industry. We fuel industries from music to entertainment to otherwise, but we don't control any industry. And so even hair products is sad. So, you know, we're really haven't really bought in as a people to this capitalist system to the degree that we are doing a symbiotic relationship between money and our people. We're really like individuals, just like the Europeans in this country are born to be very individualistic. We can't afford that. We have a common oppressive history. We have that same history with others that we should be joining together to create our own foundations and our own institutions to address white supremacy and our being subjected to it. It's a global thing. It's been depersonalized because it's carried out by structures such as corporations. And yet, you know, for lack of a better term, our people have been dumbed down too, in that we're not seeking the path of, that might render us justice, might render us some freedoms, might render us some self-esteem and self-identifying, which is another issue. You know, you have a Census Bureau here in the United States that we're not quite sure who it's composed of because it changes every 4 years. But those involved behind the scenes in identifying populace, they're also labeling populations. North Africans are considered white now. Arabs are considered white. Certain Latinos are considered white. And so we do see the buy-in of those of European descent to expanding on the category of white, the privilege, the in-group, out-group that this country is based on. I think the Latino populations did speak concerning Trump, but they have some issues concerning indigenous versus being called a dead language, Latin or Hispanic, or identifying not with their indigenous blood but through the conqueror's language and identity, and yet, you know, they've been oppressed as well. We have this issue, you know, going out in the native people's lands being violated on the environmental racism issue. We have the prophecy of the rainbow tribes coming together, which seems to be the thing that's going on with Standing Rock. So there's a lot of convergence, a lot of paradigm shifts going on, and going forward, we can expect worse things to happen concerning white supremacy. And what do we do to respond? We have the issues of self-defense as well as self-determination, but certainly self-defense in that we're becoming headline victims and people are becoming desensitized to snuff videos by the police on black folks. It's a maddening state that we're in. And I'm still somewhat still in a reactive mode myself, in that I don't even want to be around people of European descent. I suspect them all as racists, and even as the so-called allies, white folks need to take a stand on white supremacy. It's out there. It's their issue. It's their comfort zone. It's their privilege. It's their psychological issue, neurosis of implicit bias. It's theirs. You have the law, which is antiquated, that doesn't entertain the new science. So implicit bias isn't a factor in the law. Racism isn't a factor in the law. Internalized inferiority, they call it, or internalized oppression that people of color suffer. While at the same time, people of European descent or white folks are still in denial of internalized superiority as a neurosis. So we have a long way to go, and I'm not optimistic about this country. In these next 4 years, a lot of damage can be done. A lot more lives will be lost. And we're all trying to, fulfill this European dream of America, which is really another misnomer, because people of European descent aren't Americans. They didn't come from here. So we have a lot of long way to go, Scotty. I really didn't get a chance to sit in on your conversations right after that election, but I'd like you to pipe in maybe a little bit, if you could, on some of the things that you gathered from your conversation the other day pending the election of Donald Trump.
Greetings, Robin, and greetings to the listeners. What I think that black folks, non-white people, and particularly Hispanics, and I also had posted in the chat room at uberconference.com/blacktalkradionetwork. If listeners don't want to call in, they certainly can put a question in there or make a comment. But I had put in there, when you were talking about the people who voted for Donald Trump and the fact that all these white women voted for them, I've been hearing the same in earlier conversations as well, where people were saying all these white women, I mean, several different programs. One of them was pre-recorded, The Barbershop, episode 7, where he was saying these white women in the media, and they was trying to make it look like, oh, Donald Trump has victimized all these white women. But yet all these white women voted for Donald Trump. So that white women been lying to you that they're not offended by Donald Trump. That the majority of women vote, white women voted for Donald Trump. But in terms of what I'm looking at as an abolitionist, taking an abolitionist viewpoint of the, abolitionist assessment of the battlefield assessment, I would say that it could get real dangerous for black folks and Hispanics in terms of slave catching. We know that people like David Sherrod Clark and Joe Arpaio supported Donald Trump. David Clark, who is a black proxy sheriff over the county, if correct me if I'm wrong, Robin, but isn't Milwaukee County has the highest incarceration rates for black men? I believe.
Right, and it's the most segregated city also in the U.S.
Yeah, so they got a black sheriff, and he gave a keynote address at the Republican convention. Then you had Donald Trump talking about law and order. I remember when he first went to Wisconsin during the primaries, and he on a stage was asked about private prisons, and he said he thinks they're great, blah, blah, blah. He thinks they do a wonderful job, and blah, blah, blah. And I saw the private prisons endorsed him with a huge amount of money to one of them super PACs supporting Donald Trump. And we saw their stock double. They recovered all what they lost where we had inflicted that blow on them. When the Department of Justice and ICE said that they were going to reevaluate or not renew any contracts. So the private prison slavery industry put a bunch of money down on this super PAC for Donald Trump, and now their stock has went up. So they've already recouped that little 100,000, 200,000, half a million, how much ever it was. They recouped that overnight. All right, their stock shot up with his election. And he talked about that law and order stuff. We got Giuliani, former prosecutor, former mayor, love stop and frisk, and what have you. The immigration rhetoric about building the wall and deporting people, they're getting ready to do that, man. It's going to be real out there on the battlefield. I expect prisons to be built. I expect corporations to increase their orders in products and services that are performed by slaves in the prison. I expect them to continue to use and increase their use of prison slavery, whether it is Hispanics on immigration violations in the prisons of GO group, or whether it is black people who fall victim of stop and frisk and all of that. So be prepared for that for the next 4 years. I don't know how fast they can put it in place. He has a Republican Congress. They could do a lot of damage in these next 4 years. That's my assessment, Robin.
Well, I agree 100% with the abolitionist perspective in that slavery continues. You have vacant FEMA camps right now. You have the legislation already in place in terms of the immigration. That's money. They're going to commodify black and tan bodies. That's going to be ongoing. As far as the movement in terms of the private prisons, that's just going to bolster the government prisons. I see. I mean, it's just taking it out of the hands of this inept private process, but the numbers I don't think are going to go down because you have this onslaught of this immigration-hating a mantra and dynamic going on. And they do. They have empty FEMA camps right now around the country. That's government. That's federal. And so I just see a lateral handoff. It's like a smoke screen because it's too much involved in slavery, the commodifying bodies. And they have a whole nother resource of bodies through this immigration process. So I don't see that holding up. And for all the rhetoric of Donald Trump, there's a lot of people supporting that, and there's the finances involved. So there's big money in commodifying bodies. Slavery ain't like a free thing. It's big industry feeding corporations. And so that's going to be ongoing, I would think, under Donald Trump. And man, it's hard to forecast all the negative crap that's going to happen, because we know it's going to happen, but it's just a matter of when it takes effect, actually. And I feel like there's really, protest is not really going to stop this train, you know. And in terms of traversing through the legal process, where, you know, on a federal level, you have the Republicans, the same folks are going to be controlling the Congress and the Senate. So, I don't know, Scotty. I think it's time to prepare. I think it's time to prepare in terms of self-determination, purchase of land, and black folks, really, we really need to understand how this European linear process of being individual is not working for us.
I think black folks need to buy guns. I think they need to buy seeds. They need to buy farming equipment. They need to do wherever they live, be able to produce their food, because there are finna be some austerity measures if the rhetoric holds up for the past decades or 20 years or 30 years of the Republican Party in the myth of the welfare queen. There are a lot of people on welfare, but that's because of no jobs. So,
or race and black.
Yeah, so, I mean, I haven't heard Donald Trump say anything about that. Now, he knows, think about this, his administration knows that there are no jobs, that this country has been hurt by the trade agreements. And so, is he going to work with Paul Ryan? And where is Paul Ryan, in the Senate or in the House? And on those austerity measures to put further cuts to TANF, to EBT assistance, to housing assistance. I mean, Obama agreed to some of those cuts, so obviously I think Donald Trump would agree to those as well. I don't know, man. The forecast looks bleak.
It looks bleak from a dependency perspective. It doesn't look bleak if we put our money together and our efforts together once and for all. Look for black cities. Look for black controlled cities. Jackson, Mississippi be one that could be infused. But there's some islands out there. We just need to identify, you know, where, and adjust. I mean, our dependency on the white man in this for jobs, for everything, is sickening. I've been involved in food sovereignty, which to me is the kind of the ground floor grassroots organizing for self-determination. Is, first of all, let's feed ourselves, because we can't, you know, be organizing and protesting and all this and then have to run to one of these grocery stores to get food and snacks for our protests. We need to be growing our own. And as you said, you know, this, we can see pending a major social collapse going on. And they've been preparing. They even have radio and TV shows called Preppers. They've been preparing for a while. They have books out called Strategic Relocation, 500-page plus manuals identifying, you know, migration patterns of the minorities out of the cities and how to block them off and where to be safe. And, you know, and then you have, you know, the weaponry issue as well. Obviously, the idea is to tag every black male with a number so he can't be legal, and the rest you just, you know, you program. You were talking about this black sheriff. I don't consider that as a good reference. This proxy racist who happens to be, you know, his color, racism and racist come in both colors. You have proxy races that are black that hold city jobs, mayors, chief of police, are the police, will kill a black person, does hate other black folks. So you have this sickness going on that's embedded, that is very active. So when I think of white supremacy, I'm also thinking of those who uphold it, the boule, who are sworn to be advisors to the king or whatever, you know. But there's a sellout process that goes with that Willie Lynch thing. And so, you know, I don't really see all kin folks ain't my skin, all skin folks ain't my kin folk. It's really down to that. And so, you know, it's really about a collective efforts, intentional efforts, self-determined efforts, and as much as possible, don't spend none of your money from a European source. If you can get it from someone else cheaper, I would pursue that process. We are economically like dependent on this system. Go ahead, Scotty.
I just want to see if you saw the board. I think you have a caller.
Okay. I don't see it, Scotty. I just see two of us.
Oh.
Yeah, I do. I see someone calling from Florida. You like to bring him in?
Yeah, you're not able to? There you go.
I just did. Yeah, we have a caller from Pompano Beach, Florida. Would you like to speak on the show?
Hey, how you doing tonight, brothers? I was just listening in. That's all.
All right. Well, thank you for doing
thank
that,
you.
Brother.
Yes, sir. Every time, all the time.
My man. So Scotty, Robin, we didn't take a break, and we've got another 15 minutes. You want to just go through?
You take as much time as you need. There's no more live programming tonight. I am about to take a station identification break for Black Talk Radio. But to go further to why I pointed out David Clark is he was angling for a job in the Trump administration. And if you read that, what he wrote and was published by white racists in, what was the name of that D.C. paper, The Hill, that paper?
Yeah.
The Hill, based in Washington, D.C., and he wrote an op-ed piece in there where he was calling black people in urban areas scum and saying that this was war and that they need to be exterminated. He was saying these things and was specifically naming Black Lives Matter. And so,
well, he's gone beyond that now. He's saying the protesters to Trump, to the president, should be quelled.
See, that's what I'm saying. Now, this man has been promoted as the next Homeland Security chief. So, come on. It could get real out there real quick.
Well, Homeland Security is also the biggest employer in the United States now.
Right.
Since it was.
Gotta have a lot of people to maintain them camps you was talking about.
So meanwhile, we don't have a nation state. No safe sanctuary zones.
Black people, let's watch this though. Let's watch the reaction of our brothers and sisters out there, confused and conscious. But when white folks felt threatened, they went in by President Obama. What did they do? They made a run on the gun stores. I thought y'all was so afraid of Trump. Let's see what them gun sales look like and who's buying them.
And, you know, that's been forecasted, too, this so-called race war. Really, we're not prepared for no war. And yet, you know, there's war against us as a people, you know. And we need to extend and exercise our rights, including, and first of all, our human rights, but also our rights to carry, our rights to protect ourselves, our rights for self-defense. So, yeah, let's take this quick break, man. We'll come back and end this tonight.
Pretend hundreds of black leaders don't exist as their way to prevent us from realizing our collective struggle and our strength. Picture it. If we really knew, what would real black unity look like? Visualize it. What if the black world could put aside our differences and come together to not just talk, but to truly create solutions? Converge on Newark, New Jersey for the historic State of the Black World Conference, the interorganizational black unity event of the century. Join us. November 16th through 20th, 2016. 5 full days of strategic and tactical collaboration sessions to take back control of our communities and resources worldwide. Don't just wait for someone else to solve our problems. Become a part of the solution. The State of the Black World Convention, November 16th through 20th, 2016, Newark, New Jersey. Register today at www.letsbuyblack365.com/event/SOBWC.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
You are tuned in to Race Treaty on Black Talk Radio Network. We have about 20 minutes left in the broadcast. If you have any questions or comments, any observations you would like to share on the Donald Trump, coming Donald Trump presidency, administration, what are your thoughts? What are you observing out there on the battlefield? You can give us a call at 866-517-9025. That's 866-510-9025. That is a toll-free number. You can also connect to us via the internet or find international numbers at uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. And now back to Robin on Race Treaty right here on the Black Talk Radio Network.
Thank you, Scotty. Welcome back. You know, let's delve a little deeper into the dynamics of white supremacy, because we use these labels, and do we have a real definition of what that means, and how can we undo it, and how can we fight it? And you know, I was just thinking again about the fact that African Americans, if they put their money together, would represent one of the top 10 countries in the world in resources. Yet we've been programmed to be totally consumers. We make money and give it back over to him. And I often wondered if there would be as much patience as a white man has had with our presence in this country if we weren't spending our money with him. The State Robin, of the Black World Conference. Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish your thought on the State of the Black World Conference. You know, Sister DeWolte will be there as well. DeWolte Desiree, how you pronounce her name? Y'all have had her on as a guest in the past.
Yeah, we work with her. She's going to be one of our hosts coming up, actually, Sister Dawati. And she also is involved on the UN dealing with racism, white supremacy, negrophobia or afrophobia, and colorism. Now, that's probably the most complete mission and vision of an NGO that I've seen dealing with the issue of white supremacy and racism, because we have issues ourselves as African Americans, as people of African descent. And so that colorism plays out very heavily in Brazil, where it's not actual white folks, but there's a color gradient that allows for that white privilege based on the same model, white supremacy. So that analysis is expanded. Yes, that sister will be there, and she'll be a host coming up, as I said, on Race Treaty. Looking very much forward to her involvement. She also is one of the persons that informed me in Race Treaty that, you know, the African states, the Union African states, rejected the application of African Americans to be a part of that. You know. And Haiti was involved and received in. And it goes to show that those of us of so-called African Americans, we don't have that nation identity. We do have the buy-in to white supremacy. And oftentimes, you know, that slogan kind of echoes in my mind, is that most black folks don't want to do away with white supremacy. They just want a better place in it. And so then you have this class issue, you know, where how do you bring the working folks and the educated folks who are damn sure aware of white supremacy and its dynamics, but are so fed into the system, bought into the system, dependent to the system for their class status, that they'll turn their backs and make that transformation into becoming a proxy racist. which is, in fact, you know, more involved than just Uncle Tom and assimilation. It's upholding white supremacy. Your life, your oxygen, your money, your existence is centered on upholding a system that oppresses your people. And when I say your people, I'm not speaking of a nation that don't exist. I'm speaking of people that have the same historical experience. And so, you know, without dealing with white supremacy, with some national plan, some national movement, it's always going to fall into the argument that the white folks are now giving, which is ableism, sexism, always the comparison of the isms, when the whole system is the big macro ism is white supremacy and racism. And I thought about the abolitionist movement also, in the sense that it evolved out of slavery to abolish slavery. But what created slavery was white supremacy. And so, you know, in abolishing slavery, you're not necessarily abolishing white supremacy.
Well, I disagree with you there. I disagree with you there. And if you allow me to explain why I disagree with you there, I'm not in conflict with you, but I can explain why, as one of the founders of what we call the New Abolitionist Radio, I mean movement, but based on law. First, there was slavery, and I know that there are some white slavery deniers out there, but in Europe, they didn't have white supremacy. They had clans, they had tribes, they had nations, and they made war on each other, and they enslaved. They ain't gonna say they enslaved, but each other, but the queen, the kings of England pretty much enslaved other, what we now call white people, but the Irish, the Scots, the other little Germanic tribes, and as they tried to expand. So also the Romans didn't have a problem with enslaving nobody based on skin color. So slavery was first. Here in America, what's so insidious about American brand of slavery, well, I'm agreeing with you. I'm going to change my words. These people aren't Americans. They're not from here. These Europeans, slavers that came to America, to this continent, they are the ones who introduced race-based slavery. Now, they started out with some Irish and whatnot. I've read documents or accounts where they were specifically mating white Irish females with African males to produce mulattoes, and particularly for sexual slavery, because they would fetch a lot more money. These rich people like Thomas Jefferson, who did Thomas Jefferson have as his sexual slave? A mulatto. And so, but then I think you had Bacon's Rebellion, I think it's called,
right,
and what right. have you. And so then the Irish sold out to white supremacy. They were the original sellouts.
Right.
They were right. original sellouts, and then they became the proxies of it. But now, you know, all these hundreds of years, now everybody accepts that they're white. Okay, everybody accepts they're white. And then some of them didn't even come over here till right prior to the Civil War, fleeing the potato famines and whatnot, and also being mistreated and starved in Ireland. But they come over here, straight over here, and sell out to white supremacy. That's the American Correct. Dream, is to become a white supremacist, to move up from being a poor starving cracker to a white supremacist. That's the American dream.
So I don't
dream.
See any conflict so,
but
in what
let me
saying.
Finish. Let me finish. One more Go thing. Ahead. I'm going to tie it up with some more evidence that you can look up. It was in the 1600s in the Virginia colony that white supremacy first got legislated. In the slave codes, you can look this up. Look up Virginia slave codes. That'll put you on the right trail. In the slave codes, they not only talked about how the movements of enslaved Africans, but started stripping free black people of their rights, stripped them of their Second Amendment rights, stripped them of their stand your ground rights. That's the only way I can describe it, because it was like they could not physically defend themselves against a white person. That is the first, I could be wrong, but that's the first evidence that I saw a white supremacy being legislated. Now, in society, you could still have a white supremacist attitudes and whatnot. I don't want, you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that was the birth of racism or people holding these personal views. I'm talking about when it became a system, when it became systematic, backed up by law, and that's the Virginia slave codes. And so I say it was first slavery, then white supremacy. And so, but if we abolish slavery, I don't give a damn about them crackers about to hold a parade for Donald Trump up there in North Carolina. You know, I live in North Carolina, too. We know how thick it has been historically with racist white supremacists. But also, Robert Williams showed us the way, too, of how to deal with them. Okay? My uncles, my Correct. Grandfather showed us the way, like you was talking about earlier, self-defense. So that's how you deal with them crackers. But that's why we say in the abolitionist movement, we focus primarily on abolishing slavery, which is in the UN Charter. The Constitution should reflect what's in the UN Charter. Abolish slavery in all its forms.
It's a crime against humanity, no doubt about it. And, you know, it's insidious, as is white supremacy. And its attachment to capitalism and commodifying bodies in various ways. And you laid the historical timeline out and how it was codified after Baker's Rebellion, whiteness was. And yet, you know, the founding documents of this country infer it in a patriarchal focus on the male property owner, the white male property owner. And so, and the indentured servants weren't property owners for whatever period in time that they experienced their slavery. And you're right, they sold out and became the slave catchers and the proxy races at that time. I don't, you know, I went through my bit inside the system and really come to understand the legality of the system, and that is how it entraps, you know, our people, and how this U.S. legal system is really bankrupt of justice. And so it will never render justice, because it's built around a supremacist base, you know, a foundation. It is. And then when it laid patchwork to ameliorating the Negro problem with the 14th Amendment, it also went abstract and empowered an invisible power system in terms of the corporations obtaining personhood, and subsequent 100+ laws that morphed and gained strength in identifying the rights of corporations, where, as after the 14th Amendment, I think there were 4 laws concerning the people who, of African descent, which was what, the Board of Education, Plessy Ferguson. These laws are like band-aids to full involvement in the society, and similar to the idea of playing Monopoly for 3 hours, 4 hours, and someone comes to the table and we all give them a piece of money and a property. In the subsequent 4 hours, that person's not going to acquire any equity with us who's been playing for all that time. Put that into basis of centuries, and you have this free labor. So until we come together economically, you know, and self-determination is not taught in the schools, you know, collectivism, Harambe isn't taught in the schools, you know. And so we've rendered our children over. I mean, with the Jews turning their children over to the Nazis to educate their subsequent generations. So we got a lot of maladies that we're dealing with. And right now it's getting down to survival. Because, you know, that what is they call in European psychology the hierarchy of needs, you know, the top self-actualization at the bottom is safety, security. We're fighting for that. We're not, and we'll never actualize in a white supremacist system. It's not built for us. We have to self-identify. And we got allies potentially. If you went to UN and presented your case to the UN, you would be looking at a crowd of majority people of color.
But we can't leverage those allies. We can't develop relationships because we aren't going to that forum with any identity as a people, as far as a nation. And so I'm really still feeling like, you know, if call us indigenous or whatever, I'm not really feeling this landless, this nationless status that we experience while we try to feed into this American, so-called American dream. And we can be given money and pacified and become proxy racists in exchange and feel like we've achieved. And that's all that they'll render to you.
Something you mentioned earlier is important. And I've heard listening to some of the other programs on the network where black people cite that figure of $1 trillion worth, you know, that's how much dollars you circulating, but dollars aren't resources. Those aren't the same thing. Dollars are like David on Tendo Radio calls it, a slave wage. Kings get paid in gold and silver. And so $19 trillion in spending power in a crooked capitalistic system that won't even hire you. And so, you know, to say that that's a resource, we don't. So, but they should.
It isn't a resource.
But they should.
It's a resource to the white man. He says, you say spending power. He says receiving your spending power.
So it's not our resource. It's his, right?
Correct.
So we on the same page. But why not take those dollars, pool them together, and buy some resources like land?
You have Boley, Oklahoma, I believe. They had their own electric system. I mean, we could jump ahead with internet off the satellite, with solar, with, you know, we set up our own development infrastructure. That's where the money should be going. That's what I'm involved with here. We're looking at the Kingdom of Happy Land. It's up for sale, this historic black nation site. It should be on the historic banner to purchase that and set up a model for self sustainability from energy, food production, waste treatment, how to live without wires to your crib, how to live without having to go to his grocery store, how to live without having to go to his markets to buy his products for our survival. And until we get to that point, you know, in a collective, and I'm looking for a nationwide collective to set up these little satellite models all over, because we need to create not only the knowledge, we need those sanctuaries and an alternative way of living that we define that is lacking all this materialism, that we have to have this white man's name brand whatever in order for our self-esteem to function, rather than watching, you know, plants grow and you pluck your plants and feed yourself and you buy collectively. I mean, I come from a whole different mindset in how to remedy lifestyle, and I'll never find it in this singular picket fence house in the suburbs or wherever in the white man's land. You know, it ain't ever gonna work. So yeah, it's about self-determination models. There's models out there that have achieved some success. We should be looking and studying them really hard right now. We should be forming, not just gathering guns and owning guns, but we should have rod and gun clubs. They should be in there recruiting where the white man's recruiting with his ROTC in the high school before them kids get cases. You know, and I mean, it's a lot of work, man, that needs to be done, but there are a lot of brethren and sisters that are up to the calling. And now I think if we put our energy together and focus on a wider banner than white supremacy, but under our international human rights law, if we finally embrace what we was born with, then we're beyond defining from the outside as being African American or less than human.
Born, do what Malcolm died for. Why did they kill
him? You know
him?
That.
Why did they kill him? Because he was talking about putting a case on. On these crackers at the UN.
Well, you know, it also was about the whole package of self-determination, which means that we need to represent our own interests outside of the U.S. instead of crying inside the U.S. and having our crying message sent out through their filter to the international world.
In order to put a case on them, you have to be a nation, and I think he meant that. And he was working towards that with the OAU, right? That's he why was. They
killed Republic him. Of New Africa. He was. And then they tried to micro the same efforts down in Jackson as a model. Again, a model for survival in a metropolitan setting, which we need. Because, you know, these proxy races running Detroit, running the cities, running police departments, running human resources, running this or that, they just doing the white man's bidding. I mean, we look at color the same way as a white supremacist lays it out. We dislike people based on color. We see a black person, all of a sudden we feel some affinity to his success when he don't give a fuck about us, and his job might be to oppress us. And so, you know, there has to be really a real redefining of who we are, you know, because we have been damaged by an assimilationist process. And so you can't be a genuine product as a byproduct of assimilation. It ain't even possible. So, I mean, yeah, you right. We need those infrastructures, and buying power don't mean nothing when you ain't buying with your own people, because we ain't producing nothing. You know, and so, you know, yeah, we could jump ahead, man. We could be, you know, they got geniuses all over the world. Most of them are non-white, actually, but we just ain't accessing the global community for resources and knowledge. We dependent on a white man, but it don't take that much now with this technology to set up models for sustainability, permaculture, you know, high tech. I called it high tech retribalization when I was down in Belize. I had an aha moment. You know, when I was down in the jungles and was thinking, well, you know, if there was a model set up for survival like this encampment all over the world, so when this shit goes down and Babylon gets to fall, that we can get back to basics and know how to survive, you know, and know how to work together collectively, you know, understand our commonality is not a complexion, you know, it's a state, you know, and it's a mind, it's a consciousness, you know. So there's so much deprogramming that's in order, man. And brothers like yourself that have been able to stand up because you recognize communication is the key. We're not in the information age anymore. I mean, we're in the information overload. We're in the communications age. We have to reach out, connect, and render that message. And you're one of those leaders in doing that, Scotty, and I appreciate that. And we're going to end this segment of Race Treaty. And hopefully we'll get more audience involvement in the call-ins going forward, and we'll expand on this message. Power to you.